Blog Talk Radio.
Tell me what you want, tell me what you see, where you wanna go, what you wanna be. If you have a dream, you can make it there with a lot of work and a lot of prayer. If you take your time, gotta be precise, gotta have a plan, double check it twice. Wait, hold up, slow down, still gonna need advice. Someone's on before, maybe talk to them, then after you do, go and talk to him. Great, it's gonna come, maybe not tonight, take your time today, teach you something right.
Got a lot of friends, made a lot of ends, Twitter, you the trend, him a Bentley Benz, but you moving kind of fast. Keep sweating, you gotta make it last, live every day like it's your last, but don't forget to have a blast.
Welcome, welcome. This is Time Out with Sylvia Crawley. I'm your host, Sylvia Crawley Milbury. I have a very interesting show lined up for you tonight. We have Mr. Otis Winston. Otis, thank you so much for being on the show.
You know it's my pleasure, Syl.
Okay. Otis, we're going to jump right into the show because we always run out of time, but we are not going to run out of time today. If you are online, understand that the show is now an hour and a half long. So once the hour and a half runs out, if you're online, you'll automatically be booted off the call. But if you're calling in, you can hear the overage of the call. So if we go even longer, you can listen to what we're saying after the show ends. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. That's the call-in number. So you may want to call before we get close to the end. I have Otis Winston on the show today, and I'm excited that this is radio and not TV because Otis and I, we talk a lot, and we go in with our conversations. And I'm happy that it's a radio show because he can't see all the viewers who are on the call tonight, and we have quite a few viewers tonight. He can just simply talk to me like he does all the time, and you all get a chance to witness what I have always experienced. I've known Otis since he was about 15 years old, and I've had the pleasure of watching his maturation process into a man of God. And I was actually in a youth choir at my church. And, you know, we just kind of got different people throughout our city, not just at our church, a bunch of young people throughout the city, and we put together a choir. Dawkins and Dawkins were the choir directors, and we had our first gig performing in Toronto, Ohio, at Otis's dad's church. And so we were excited. This is our first live performance, and we went in there and turned that church out. I mean, literally, the music was so loud. And this church was a quiet little church, you know. We had drums and keyboards, and we sang so loud that the soot started coming out of the ceiling. And we had white shirts and black pants, I'll never forget. And dirt was just falling on our shoulders, on our hair. We said, this church is falling down. We are bringing the roof down. And Otis and all his brothers and all his neighbors, they were lined up on the back wall with standing room only. And we sang our little hearts out, and that was my first encounter with Otis Winston. Little did I know that we would together be on a journey where we would be lifelong friends and in each other's lives. And so, Otis, you played basketball and ran track at Ohio State. Sometimes
yes, I did.
When athletes experience popularity, you know, you got a lot of groupies, you have a lot of favor, people want to do you favors, you know, give you summer jobs and give you this. It's because you're an athlete. It's hard sometimes for athletes to think about a relationship with God because there's so many distractions and so many forces pulling at them. How old were you when you seriously made a decision to accept Jesus Christ into your life? Can you recall how old you were?
Yeah. I was 23 years old when I made that decision. I remember like it was yesterday, and so funny because you talk about the connection that we have. It was your mom actually who ushered me into my calling. A lot was going on in my life, and I went home and I called you. You said call my mom. I called your mom. Your mom and Sister Jones met me at the church, and it was a wrap. I mean, they just prayed for me, and I prayed, and then, you know, that's when I believe my journey began.
Yeah, my mom, I remember my mom telling me it was on a weekday. It wasn't even on a Sunday where most people go up for the altar call and get baptized. I think they opened up the doors of the church like on a Friday or something like that and baptized you. And my mom said that you called and said, "Mrs. Crowley, I've been really drawn to your daughter, and I couldn't figure out what it was about her. But everything that I've tried to accomplish, she's done it. And everything I wanted, she has it. And I figured out what it is that she has." And she started to explain that conversation to me. So it was really cool that without me even knowing that you were watching me, that I was able to kind of be a witness to you so that you would give your life to the Lord.
It was, you got to think about it. Here you were playing in the WNBA. I was trying to make it and break into the NBA. You played at North Carolina. Y'all won a national championship. I played at Ohio State when it was very, very crazy at the time, and a lot of stuff was going on. And then, you know, when you would come in town, we would sit, we would talk, and just, you just had this light, you had this aura, you know, and you had something that I didn't have at the time. And that was a relationship, you know, with God. And when I saw that, I knew that it wasn't only for one person, you know. So that's when I reached out to Miss Crowley, and she just, you know, they tarried for me. It was only us three in the church, us three. And it did not take very long. I remember when I got done, she said, "You're ready." She said, "You were on fire. You were ready. You just popped and went right in. And my life changed, you know, because I was in a deep, dark place, deep, dark place. I had just got hurt going to veterans camp for the CBA. I got home, and the woman who I thought I was, you know, I was in a relationship with ended up leaving me, and then I ended up getting evicted. So much was happening in my life at that time, and I just felt like I did not want to go on anymore. And that's when I made that call. And little did I know, is it was all a setup. I was set up to be blessed.
You said, I think that would be a timeout moment for you. The purpose of the show and the name of the show is timeout. And when you think about a timeout in sports, it's that time when you pause, you assess the situation, you correct some things, you regroup, and then you resume with the opportunity to play better. So I would, you know, given what you just said about what was going on in your life and everything around you, I would definitely say that that was a timeout moment for you. That leads me to my next thought, my next point that I wanted to make. You said that you were, you know, you just got back from the CBA tryout. You know, you had a break-in, someone broke into your house. You know, your girlfriend had just left you, so you were going through something at that point. I want to share my timeout moment that I had with you, and I too was going through a lot at the time. I was playing in ABL for Colorado Explosion, and my brother was sick at the time. My brother was diagnosed with cancer. He had a lot of chemotherapy, and he needed a bone marrow transplant. And so I wanted to be tested to see if I was a match, to see if I could be a donor. And so I talked to my coach about it. I was in season, and my coach recommended that I did not do that. You know, she said, "We're in season, you're a starter, and we need you." And I said, "Well, this is my brother's life. You know, what are you talking about?"
Yeah.
And I wanted to go see, you know, so I got tested, and then he ended up getting, you know, some other donor for bone marrow, and I wanted to go out to see him and be with him. So I made a decision to go. And it was against my coach's wishes. And when I got back, I wasn't a starter anymore. I was playing very little minutes, maybe like 3 minutes. I had won a slam dunk contest, and people wanted to know when was I going to dunk. And I was thinking, well, I'm not playing, so I don't know when I'm going to dunk. I also went through a very tragic situation where I had a stalker. And he was stalking me, and he tried to commit suicide in my house. And, you know, afraid, police were circling around my house. And Otis, you came to town, or actually, we were in Columbus. I came home, and we were together, and we went to this church carrying everything that we were going through at that time. And they played, there was like a revival or something, and they played this song, No Weapon Formed Against Me Shall Prosper. And we just had a major meltdown, and we basically shut down the church. We were crying, and we were shouting, and we
shut it down.
We
shut
tore
down.
That church
pastor,
up.
The pastor couldn't even preach. I just wouldn't sit down. And I have to correct you, it was in Colorado where we shut it down. It was your church.
Oh, okay. It was in Colorado. I thought it was in Columbus.
It was in Colorado, and we shut that church down. I know when by the time we sat down, he was like, well, goodness, about time now I can preach. But it was just that moment. Those words of that song was just life at that time, because we had so many weapons that was forming against us. So when I heard no weapon, as soon as I heard no weapon, I just stood up instantly. And I look over, and you stood up. Next thing you know, our eyes are closed, our hands are raised. And those words just ministered to the brokenness that was not only in me, but that was in you. Because when I say broken, I mean, it's like, here I am, Lord. And then to hear no weapon formed against us shall prosper, it won't work. So everything that had came at us, guess what? It didn't break us. It made us better. So that was that moment where it just became, you can bring what you want, you can say what you want, you can throw at me what you want, but it's not going to prosper. I am here to stay. You should have took me out when you had a chance.
Right. To this day, when I hear that song, I go in. I go in. So it's definitely a timeout moment for me as well as you.
Yeah.
You ended up marrying your college sweetheart and having two kids, Promise and Rain. Give us their ages. How old is Promise now?
My daughter is 10. She turns 11 over the summer. My son just turned 9. Those are the apples of my eyes, man. My children.
Wow. Promise is 10. Oh, my goodness. Time flies.
Promise is 10. Promise is 10. Yeah, if you put their names together, because you remember still, you know how hard it was, you know the testimony, you know my wife at the time and I had a hard time having children, and when we finally got pregnant with Promise, that's why her name was Promise, because I believe that God promised, and I decided when I found out that I was having a son, I wanted to name him Rain, because I believe that their destinies are connected. And God said, if we suffer with him, we shall reign with him. So you put the names together, you get Promised Rain. That's mm-hmm. where their names came from. That's where their names derived from, because God promised that we shall reign with him.
Well, I'm glad you put some thought into your kids' names, because I've met some kids who wanted an autograph, and I said, okay, yeah, my name is Zachary. I'm like, what? What was your mom drinking when she... But anyways, there is an alarming rate of absentee fathers in the African-American community. However, there are some good fathers out there who play a daily role in their kids' lives, and you are one of them. I know you have many responsibilities in raising your kids, but what would you say is the biggest responsibility to them?
My biggest responsibility to my children is letting them know that daddy is always going to try to be there. Being in the profession I'm in right now, I do a lot of traveling, but I always try to make it back to my children. I always try to be at their important events, not just their important events, just be there where my son can lay on my chest and sleep at night, where my daughter and come in my room and say, Daddy, I'm hungry in the middle of the night, or whatever. I always try to be there, because I know what it's like to look for your father and he's not there. I know what that feels like, and I never want them to feel that. Am I there 24/7? No, I'm not, and unfortunately, but I am there to really try to navigate them and try to share with them my life experiences, so they won't have to go through the same pitfalls that I went through. So my biggest thing for my children is letting them know that daddy is here. I'm here. I'm not going nowhere until God decides it's time for my life to burn out. Until then, daddy is going to do his best to be here, period.
Right. I'm a daddy's girl, and I think a father-daughter relationship is very, very important, especially during when kids are developing their filters between the ages of 3 and 5. What would you say, how would you say you play a role in Promises Life, your daughter, that's a little bit different than Rain's life?
The way I play a role in my daughter's life, we have these days once a month where we try to do it twice a month where it's called Daddy-Daughter Date. And what I do is I try to show my daughter how a man should respect her, how a man should cherish her, and how he should encourage her at all times.
Give us an example of a daddy-daughter date.
The daddy-daughter date is I pick her up, and she's dressed to T, because, you know, you've seen the pictures before. She dresses up real nice. One daddy-daughter date, I picked her up from her mom's house. We went, got her nails did, and then after we got her nails did, we went to dinner, and her and I sat and had dinner, and we talked, and then I walked to the car, opened the door for her, then I took her to a Justin Bieber concert, and that's one of the things I will always remember, because she sat there, and she sat on my lap, even during the concert. She was standing up, and she was singing, and to turn around and see my daughter cheering for a young boy, you know, with that much enthusiasm, you know, a father's like, give me a few more years before I got to worry about this, but it was an experience of a lifetime, you know, because she gets this experience this with me. I'm there. I mean, I was there with a bunch of mothers, and it's me going to see Justin Bieber, who I don't know nothing about his music, but I needed to be there with my daughter. So that's one of the things that we do. I pamper her. I take her to dinner. I take her to a special event, and then we end the night by just sitting and eating some cookies and cream or whatever, and just talking. And we do that now once, like I said, once or twice a month, and we love it to the point to where if I'm late, which I'm never really late on my daddy daughter date, she would tell me, "Daddy, it's time for a daddy daughter date. I need to reconnect. I want to connect with you again. I love those moments. I love that we're in tune with each other. So I love it. I love it."
Yeah, I think father daughter relationship in terms of esteeming young women. Like my father always told me that I was beautiful. He always told me that, and I grew up at a time where being dark-skinned wasn't popular, so, you know, he really esteemed me, and so when I grew up, I thought I knew how all men saw me, the way my dad saw me, you know, and I'm really close to my brother. My brother's very attentive to me and my sister and my mother, and so so that was very critical to my relationships with other men, because I was esteemed by my father very early.
Exactly, and you got to think about it. Not only were you esteemed by him, it made you realize how to decipher the fake from the real. You know, anyone will give you attention to get, you know, in your drawers. Anyone. It's easy to call a girl pretty and say, hey, baby, you pretty, you this, you that, just to get what he wants. But if he really, really is paying attention to you, then he's going to pay attention to you even when he's not getting it. And that's something that I have learned. You know, I wasn't always like that. I had to grow into that. I didn't have a man in my life. You know, my dad was unfortunately, you know, in prison most of my life when I was growing up. So I didn't see how a man should interact with a woman. But I was a mama's boy. So I just learned how to treat women the way I wanted to see my mom treated. And so I treat my daughter the way I want her to always expect men to treat her. Am I setting the bar high? Absolutely. The bar deserves to be set high. I don't want her just running around with any Tom, Dick, or Harry. The bar should be set high. They should admire her.
Right. I love the fact that you're treating her like a princess, so that when she grows older, if someone is treating her less than that, she recognizes it. She knows how she's supposed to be treated as a lady. I think that is very good. And there was something else that you pointed out. My father always complimented me on my hair, on my skin, on my eyes. Mm-hmm. And so when I heard that by men, you know the lines that men will say, "Oh, baby, you got the softest skin." Well, yeah, I heard that already. Like, you got to come with something better than that. But if you never heard that from your father, if you never heard that growing up as a little girl, when someone finally says that to you, then, you know, you think that the sky is orange when you really know that it's blue. You know, like they can just sweep you off your feet because this is something you've never heard before. So
yeah.
I think that is commendable what you're doing with your daughter. Talk to me about Rain. What do you do specifically for Rain as from a father-son perspective, and why do you feel like it's important to do that with your sons?
What I do with my son is very much like me. He, when I was younger, you know, I had a speech impediment, stuttered until I was 11, so I didn't have a lot of confidence. I didn't like talking. I was very shy and bashful because people always made fun of the way I spoke, you know, because I stuttered, and I had a stutter. So my son, he doesn't have a stutter, but he really doesn't speak very clear. He can't pronounce his R's, and sometimes he messes up on his S's or his F's. And so what I had to do with him is I had to spend time with him to let him know that it's okay. It's okay to not be able to say them now, because eventually you will be able to say them. It's okay to not be able to pronounce your own name. And that was so hard for me when I heard him. He's afraid to say pronounce his name. He used to be afraid to pronounce his name because he would say Wayne. So the one thing that gives him power, which is his name, which is Reign, which means dominion, which means supreme, he couldn't say until he learned how to slow down and say that R. So I believe it was very important for me to instill in him it's okay to not feel confident, but to not be insecure of something because it's different right now. Because just because it's different now doesn't mean it's going to be different when you get older. So you can't give yourself esteem issues with that. And that's where I work with him. And when I say he's growing up to be this awesome young boy, I mean, I love it. He's playing basketball. He's walking around thinking he's a man. And I'm showing him the difference between confidence and cockiness. And so I love it. I get to spend that time with him. We play basketball together. He came up to me the other day and said, play me and play me for real. I want you to really play for him. Play me. So I ended up dunking on him. Why? He told me to play him for real. At the end of the game, he said, way to play. He said, I'll get you eventually, which I do believe. I'm not going to take it easy on you. You know how we do it, Seal. When we play, we're competitive. I mean, I want my son to learn. I had to teach him it's okay to be competitive. It's okay to play hard against your friends and not worry about them getting mad at you because you beat them, because he was worried about all that stuff. So me being there and being able to single that out with him and being able to work with him with that, I think has been so beneficial for his confidence. Because like I said, he's walking around like he's the man now on the court. You know, I love it. I love it. And that's what I want. I'm teaching him, you know, you need to have that killer instinct, son. Don't wait on them to do something that you can do on your own. So that's what I
right.
work with him.
Right. He's very fortunate to have you guide him through that.
Okay.
You know, think about
how different
your life would be had you had someone kind of guide you through those moments. And, you know, you had your brothers, you had older brothers, and they taught you kind of how you're teaching Rain by beating them on the court and not taking it easy on them, so that you can be competitive and you'll figure out one day how to beat them. I went through that with my siblings as well. I want to move on to the next part. You ended up getting a divorce from your wife, from your children's mother. How has that changed your perspective and the type of woman that you look for now?
Oh, man. It's changed it in every like aspect of the word, what marriage represents to me. You know, I was, you know how I felt about my marriage. I was in it for the long haul. I wanted my own family. I wanted something that I felt I never was a part of, you know. My brothers were there, my mom was there, but, you know, when you have your own family, that's something that you feel that God gave you. And when that ended, it was a hard time, you know, even though I knew it had to end because it just wasn't healthy for me. So what the way it changes is, shortly after my divorce, I met another woman, and she showed me so much that I didn't know, you know. So she showed me that a woman is supposed to be supportive. A woman is supposed to be there. A woman is supposed to encourage you and tell you that you have gifts and this, that, and the other. So that was, you know, a blessing to me. So now looking for my next wife, they got to match that. It's not about what you look like. It's about, are you good for me? Can you handle where God is taking me? Can you handle where he's positioning not just me, but eventually us? Because that's what I look for. Because what looks good to you might not be good for you. So
that's a tweetable moment right there. That's a tweetable moment.
What looked good to you might not be good for you. And the thing that I've learned and the thing that I'm looking for now is, can you have my back when I feel like I don't have it myself? That is the most powerful thing for me, Phil. Can you have my back when I don't even know which way I'm going? I don't know if I'm going, when I'm trying to go right, my body say go left, my mind say go up, my body say go down. Can that woman have my back and say, baby, you sit still? It's like that Jerry Maguire, the way she was when he wanted to take it, and she's like, this is what you're going to do. You're going to sit out. She became his backbone and fueled him in the moment when he most needed it. So that's what I need in my life. That's what I need, because I got a lot going on right now. You know that. I need that woman that's going to be my backbone when I don't know which way I'm going. Baby, I don't know what to do. Hey, this is what you're going to do, baby. I prayed and I sought God, and this is what he told me you should do. That's what
I need. Okay, so let's talk about when you were just talking about how when you don't know which turn to make. Let's talk about when the air came out of your basketball, when basketball was over for you. I know that you had an opportunity to play overseas. You had an opportunity for the CBA, but when you realized that, okay, track is gone, basketball's not going to pay the bills, talk about that moment. Do you feel like you were equipped to go out there and get a job, to get a regular 9-to-5 job, which is very difficult to do when you've been playing basketball at practice for 2 hours a day, and now you've got to put on the work clothes, not the tennis shoes, but the work clothes, and put on
the
tie.
For me, it was different because, remember, I had to try out with the Pistons that I declined, you know, only, you know, a lot of people didn't know that. You knew that. And then, remember, I got to try out again with the Lakers, and I declined to go to that one as well because my wife at the time wanted stability. And so when the air went out my ball, unfortunately, I feel I let it out. I feel I let the air out my ball. So it was very hard for me. I walked away from the game completely. I couldn't even pick up a ball for recreation. I just stopped playing completely. And I it was hard because here I am. I was overseas playing, and I was chasing this dream, and I ended up having to find out what else could I do. What else was I good at? And I fell into computers. And who knew that I had a gift for computer software? And that changed my life. You know, it was hard for the first few years trying to get on my feet in the computer world. It's very competitive. Softwares are constantly changing, but it was a learning. It was another learning experience. It was another learning experience. I wanted something. I knew my ex-wife at the time wanted stability, so I put everything in it. That goes to tell you, that goes to show you, I'm telling you, women, if you show a man, or if a man feels that providing for you will keep you and do this or do whatever, I know me in particular, I would move mountains to make sure she was happy or make sure that woman is happy, especially now that I rediscovered and refocused and found out who I truly am. So that's what happened to me, Phil. When it went out of my ball, man, I just had to navigate, and I found computers, and that is what was my safe haven at the time.
So how did you get into acting? Can you explain? I know how, but can you explain to our listeners how you got into acting?
Well, you got to think, when I was overseas playing ball, that's when I started writing, because I kept a journal, and little did I know that the journal that I was keeping would eventually become my first screenplay called Second Wind. and it was about a guy, you know, it was basically about my life. And I got home and I looked at it and I was like, dang, this is a script. So I started writing and started writing. And years later, I met a young lady and she was a producer, right? And she wanted to introduce me to other people. And one day she called me on the phone and she had a casting director on the line, and then I was able to send my information to that casting director, and that casting director, man, used to bring so much life to me, because every time I felt like giving up, she would be the one to send me a word and say, hey, keep doing what you're doing, you're very talented, you're very gifted, don't stop, and then I'll get fired to go again. And what happened, fast forward like 8 years, I ended up going through a divorce. And I ended up going to L.A. I went to L.A. and I went to go see a friend, and she was hosting. She was one of the guest judges of this show that Queen Latifah was trying to do in the works of doing. And as you know how you always hear right place at the right time. I believe it's called divine intervention, because here I am. I'm at this place, and I'm there to meet my friend. And when I get there, the director walks up to me and said, are you the guest actor? I said, no, I'm here to meet my friend. She was like, well, are you sure? I was like, no, ma'am, I've never acted before in my life. She said, okay, and then she kept it moving. So here I am in a room with my friend, and she gets a phone call, and the lady on the other end was panicking because she was supposed to be in starting the judging. So I told her, I said, whoever it is, tell them I'll come park their car. They can come in, and y'all can start the judging. So I go out to my, unbelief. It was Tasha Smith on the car. So I ended up getting her keys. She was like, thank you so much, Brother Otis, da, da, da. And her and I ended up building, a little friendship based off of that. So I parked the car, I come back, and then my friend walked up to me and said, hey, the guest actor, his name is Lil JJ. He was on Beauty Shop, Queen Latifah, a little comedian. She was like, he didn't show up. She was like, and they were asking, would you be that guy, that stand-in actor? I said, I never did that. She said, okay, let's try some improvisation. I said, okay. She did. She threw some stuff at me. I threw it back at her. She's like, okay, you're a natural. Get on stage and do your thing. I got on stage. Long story short, I did what I needed to do. We had to do a play from, or not a play, we had to do a part from Jerry Maguire, which is one of my favorite movies. And by the time I got done, Tasha, Robbie, and the other two people on the panel, they were like, hey, you're a natural at this. You're a natural at this. And that's when Robbie told me that maybe I need to be doing the acting, that I open up the doors for my writing. And
so
she ended up casting me in my first
directing
show.
So in pursuit of directing, you land this part, you know, in terms of acting, and so your plan was to use acting to break into directing. Is that correct?
Yes. She was like, look, a lot of people do it. You get behind, it's almost like players who become coaches. You know, you play a game, and then it opened up doors to now you can coach. You went from playing, now you're coaching, and that's what acting did for me. She actually casted me in my first part, which was on the television show The Game. She's the one who casted me in that, and I haven't stopped since.
Right. So you've had a part in The Game, the sitcom, mm-hmm. The Game, very popular show. You had a part in The Great and Powerful Oz, where you played one of the, was it the Winkies?
Yeah, I was the head Winky. Get it right.
The head Winky, where you were marching. I saw it. You were marching. And then, excuse me. Go ahead, Vic.
Can I laugh at that? I'm gonna laugh at that one. Ohio State.
You can laugh, brother.
Winky.
You can laugh.
Now I'm done. Go ahead. Go back.
You can laugh at that, Vic, but you're not paying his bills. So anyway, so you landed these roles, and then most recently, Think Like a Man Part 2. I can't believe they're actually doing a Part 2 to that movie, but since you're going to be in it, I'm definitely going to see it. But talk to me about, you've transitioned and moved to Hollywood from Columbus, Ohio to Hollywood, okay? So wrap your mind around that, listeners. Talk to us a little bit about your experience at Hollywood, just trying to get your foot in the door, where you stay, where you eat, where you sleep, all of that kind of stuff. Because a lot of people, you know, they don't know, but when you go to California or New York to pursue this kind of career, you just really have to gut it out. So paint us a picture of your life in Hollywood.
My life in Hollywood.
When you first started.
Oh, well, you got to think. It happened like I really believe God set it up like that. Because here I am. I had a job in it, and I was laid off from my job. And then next thing you know, I talked to, you know, the woman who was in my life at the time, who's still very influential. She was like, look, everyone say you need, if you get out to L.A., that you're going to break in. Give it a chance. Because I was going to go to Atlanta. You know, she was in Atlanta. I wanted to be in Atlanta. And, you know, and then I didn't. And she was like, go to L.A., see what happens. And I went out there still, and, you know, it was crazy. Because when I first got there, I stayed with a very good friend of mine. She opened up her doors for me, and it was very, very needed at the time. She'd open up the doors, and I had a place to lay my head, but what happened is when I was leaving, I only had like $120 to my name. So when I got there, it was funny because I had $120 to my name. I get on a plane. By the time I get on a plane, I had to pay for two bags, $25 and $20. So there goes half my $125 that I thought I had to go to LA in. So it was funny because I'm like, oh, shoot. I'm calculating my head, okay. When I land, I had such and such left, and that's cool, whatever. By the time I got to L.A. still and got to the baggage claim, she couldn't come pick me up, so I had to catch a cab. The cab ride took the rest of my money. So I'm in L.A., no money. Do have a place to stay. I just didn't have no money to do anything extra that I needed to do. So we just started talking about it, and I got there on a Friday, which was I think November 23rd, and by Monday I was tapped out financially, and I was like, God, what is going on? You said that this, you never said it would be easy, but goodness, I didn't think it'd be like this. So I ended up doing it, and that Monday I got a call, and I ended up getting an audition. And I was like, oh, yes, I got an audition. But here's the thing. I didn't have a car. So I called Robbie. I was like, hey, do you think so-and-so can give me a ride? And one of the persons said no. The other person answered her phone. So I called her back. She's like, well, just take my son's car. I took her son's car, and as soon as I start the car up, lo and behold, didn't have any gas. So I drive to the gas station. I'm like, oh, crap. How am I going to get gas in this car? Because I need to get to this audition. So I'm at the gas station. I'm sitting there. And this was my most pivotal, like, important moment of my life, I believe. This is where God was like, I want to see what are you made of. Because he, I mean, when you're humbled, you're humbled. When you're humbled, you're humbled. And I had to sit there, and I saw this lady walk by me. And what I ended up doing is I had to ask a lady if I can borrow $5. And I got out the car and I asked her, and she's like, unfortunately, I don't have it. So I got back in the car. I'm sitting there looking dumbfounded like, oh, my God, here I am, no money. I don't know what's going on. And I'm trying to get to this audition. Not even 2 minutes passed by. She comes back, knocks on my window. I rolled it down. She's like, look, I have to give you this. She gave me the $5. I said, thank you very much. I ran in, paid, put the gas in the car. I didn't make it around a corner before the waterfall started to flow because I was broken. I was broken. And it wasn't as drastic as the Pursuit of Happiness moment when Will was in the bathroom with his son because I was out there by myself. But it was so humbling because here's a guy who just went from making $485 a day not even 2 weeks ago, to having to ask a total stranger for $5 for gas money. So it broke me.
Right.
You know what I mean? It broke me, and it made me realize this is what I want to do by any means necessary because my kid's destiny is tied to this. So I went to the audition, I booked it, and I booked something else the next day, and it just started snowballing after that. You know, it's a hard, hard life. This is the hardest thing I believe I've ever done in my entire life, pursuing acting. You know, I mean, because it's different. You got so many people trying to do it.
Would you say it's harder than training camp for the Lakers?
Yes.
That's hard. Harder than that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You got to think, training camp for the Lakers, your skill gets you there. And you know, you got to know some people, you do, but you know, your skills get you there. Acting, you just never know. You just never know. So all the doors that's opened up for me, it's all because of God. I believe God, divine intervention, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. This is what he called me to do. This is where the anointing has been put on my life. This is the second wind of my life because it's God inspired.
All right, Vic, do we have any questions out there? Let's take a question.
Well,
Vic, are you there?
I'm here. We had one, but they were kind of gun-shy, so they jumped off. But I have a couple questions for you myself, Otis. Maybe we can get some of these folks to stop being gun-shy here. So you took a leap of faith, and you landed in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
All your money's gone. And you've got, at the time, if I'm not wrong, you have your children back home and stuff like that. Am I right about that?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. You got your children back home, and you're, you know, other doors you intentionally closed because we're trying to maintain. And when you came upon that moment where it was like, you know what, there's nothing left. What am I gonna do? You said you prayed. Tell some, because I know there's a lot of actors and producers out there that are listening to this. Tell them, I mean, to what depths could you have sank had you decided, you know what, this isn't for me, or, you know, I might look good, I might have this, but this just isn't for me. What could you have done, and what stopped you from doing it?
Well, I could have just, you know, went in a complete different direction, you know, because I was broken. And when you're broken, you need to be healed. And my brokenness was beyond my imagination. But what it did with me going through is that I was able to pull on all the stuff I've been through. I've always been a fighter. I've always been a fighter. I've never had it easy. I've never had it easy. That's like I said, I overcame the stuttering. And then I ended up graduating from a Ohio State with a communication degree. The one thing I hated to do the most was talk and pray. That became my most powerful tool. So what it did was it gave me – I had to – reconnect, resync, and say, you know what, this is what I was called to do, because I can't fail. If I fail, then my son and my daughter will have to fight that I was afraid to fight for. So that's the fight that I'm fighting. It's not just because of me, but I know that their destiny is tied to mine. So if I would have deviated from this plan, they would have had to fight everything that I'm currently fighting and getting through. And I refuse for my children to have to go through the same bullcrap that I had to go through. Now, can I save them and stop everything from happening in their life? No, absolutely not. But what I'm saying is that whatever I can do to make it easier for them, I'm going to turn over any mountain to make that happen.
Exactly. So, Otis, you said that many times that you were broken, and I know that you've gone from, you know, being kind of the star athlete where your name's always in the paper, especially in high school in our area. So to go from, you know, always getting pats on the back and getting praise to the story that you just told about being at the gas station and you had an important audition and you had no gas money and you had to ask a perfect stranger for $5 for gas. Was there ever a time where you just got tired of fighting and were depressed? Talk to me about that, that timeout moment.
My deep, dark place moment. My deep, dark place moment was these past 4 years of my life. because I went from, I think, having almost everything that I thought I was supposed to have. Key word, I thought I was supposed to have. What happened was I disobeyed. When God told me not to do something, I still did it. And it ended up backfiring in my face. And that's why I positioned myself in a bad place. So what that deep, dark place I was in was very bad. I mean, like I said, I had a person come into my life who was very, very, like, important. She did everything that I thought someone could do for someone, and I wasn't at a place to accept that. So I was so broken that I was breaking her. And it wasn't until, like, now, I'll say 8 months ago, that I had to say, I need to be healed. I need to be healed. And not just for her, I need to be healed for me, for whoever else come in my life. I don't push them away. I need to be healed. So that deep, dark place, it's real. It's real. And you don't even know that you're there half the time. You don't know you're there. You're smiling, you're joking, you're kidding, you're having fun, and then something just ain't right. You can't, you're not being who you need to be for the world to see that light. Whereas now, if you look at it still, just like how you said, 7 months ago, if you look at me now compared to 7 months ago, you said, you even said it yourself. Oh, something's changed about you. You got that fight, that laugh, that smile, that glow. I allow that anointing to flow from the inside out. That's what I allowed. I found out what I was created for, and I was created to worship and love and smile and help.
And get right.
That's what I was created for.
So what would you say to people who listen, who suffer from depression or even suicidal? How, because I posted something after my last interview with Marion Jones that said, you know, when you're depressed, you have to take small goals and small steps to get yourself out of it little by little. And I got, you know, I got a great response. And I posted a lot of quotes that she put, but a lot of people identify with that, which led me to believe that there are a lot of people who are depressed and even suicidal, and they don't know how to get out. They don't know. They're looking for something to just hold on to, but I think that people are looking for some actual steps. So what were some, like, actual steps that you took to get yourself out of that mind state of depression and, you know, and things like that?
The first thing I had to do was I had to basically remember back to when I was actually truly happy. Remember back to when I was actually truly happy. And why was I truly happy? And when I did that, it made me realize that I was truly happy when I was doing what I wanted to do, not what other people thought I should be doing. So the reason I fell in a deep, dark place, one, gave up basketball when I shouldn't. Two, gave up ministry when I shouldn't. I was a people pleaser. I was pleasing everyone around me instead of pleasing God and me. So I took my power back, Seal. I was like, you know what? I want to do what makes me happy. Just like the book, is it Eat, Laugh, and Pray, whatever it's called? If you read that book, she went on a journey to find her. What I believe a lot of people don't want to do is do that self-examination. They don't want to examine themselves. Why? Because it's hard. It's hard to realize that you're suffering and low self-esteem. It's hard to say that to yourself. It's hard to realize that, you know what, you're a jealous dude. It's hard to realize that, you know what, you're a snooper. You snoop through phones. When you look at yourself and you tell yourself those things and you look in the mirror and you're not happy with that, either one or two things are going to happen. At least it did for me. I'm either going to stay on that path of destruction, or I'm going to look at that man who was looking back at the mirror and say, I don't like you. I'm going to change you, and you will be better. And that's what I did. I didn't like what I saw. I didn't like what I was doing. I changed, and now I'm better. So people who get to know me now, they get to know the real Otis DeJuan Winston, because the one who they saw over these past how many years it's been that people have met me and known me, it wasn't me. It was a representative of me, and I was trying to find me. Well, guess what? I've been found.
All right.
Preach, brother. Preach. I'm sorry, Sue. I'm feeling it, and I'm with you 110%, but I got to bring on Helen, your sister. She's been on hold for a minute, and she has a question for you. But, brother, you're preaching to every dude. You need to change that move. Think like a man. I want to think like a man. Step up and be a man. Tell Steve I said that next time you talk to him. That's all I got on that. Let me bring in Helen.
All right.
Helen, welcome to Time Out with Sylvia. You've got
Mr.
Winston on the line.
Hi, Otis.
Hey, Helen. What's up? How you been?
Wonderful. Let me start by saying I am so proud of you. And just hearing your story, you know, I've known you for years, but hearing your story has been inspirational. So my question to you is, you've been through basketball, you've been through ministry, you've been through acting, being a father, being married, being single, and you've encountered a whole lot of people. If there was one person that you feel like has influenced you the most, outside of Jesus Christ, of course, who would that one person be and describe why?
Good question. One person who influenced me the most outside of Jesus Christ. And y'all going to think this is probably crazy, but I will be honest with you. The one person who has influenced me the most has been my son.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason being, because there's been a lot of people who influenced me. I have a lot of people who influenced me. I can go off and name names to people who've been in my life, especially over the past 4 years, who've influenced me. But the reason I say my son is he said something to me. He say things to me in private that no one will ever know, that released and broke chains off of me and insecurities off of me that I didn't even know I had until my son said them to me. And then, just like I said, still, when he told me, "Daddy, you have an audition today?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, just go in there and just be you, Daddy, because if you're you, they're going to love you the way I do. Because when you're you, everybody loves you." So my son has been that over the past 9 years, this young man has molded me and changed me. It's almost like I'm becoming a man by watching him be a boy.
Wow. That's awesome.
There's a show that's on, I think it's on the OWN channel with, she's an actress and comedian, and she adopted a little boy, and it's called Raising. I don't know what the little boy's name is, but on the commercial she said, "But I think he's raising me."
Exactly.
I don't know who's raising who.
But
kids
it's
say
true.
The darndest things, you know. They say some things, and kids are smart, you know. They watch, they observe, and they know what's going on, and they say some things at some of the most timely moments in our lives.
It is so true, Sil and Helen, because one thing I do have to say, it was a guy who came into my life 4 years ago, and I was introduced to him by his daughter. His name is Dr. Knuckles, and this man went through everything, and it was something that he shared with me that I've always held on to it, because when I needed a man in my life, I would go to the gym, and he would be there to not only shake my body, but he was helping shape my mind. And he was also influential, but it was just amazing that God knew what I needed and how I needed it. So it was just amazing. It's amazing because it's just, like I said, I'm speechless when I think about how he has positioned me where I am. You know, my Exodus journey is amazing. You know, just like I said, a lot of people have pharaohs in their life. A lot of people have pharaohs. What are you determined to do to get away from your pharaoh is the question you need to answer.
Get on it. Helen, I want to thank you for that call. I'm going to put you back on hold, Helen. If you have another question, just hit number one. But those are all the 15 callers that we have right now. If you have a question for Otis or Sylvia, just hit number one. You'll pop up. We'll cue you in, and we'll try to get you on. We've got about 35 minutes left of live air, and that's 35 minutes of prime time action with this Buckeye. You know, we had an off-air conversation. and Miss Crawley. So we're going to let them get back to the show. But if you guys want to call in and listen in, 347-637-3500. 347-637-3220. Again, that number is 347-637-3220. And the phone line is brought to you today by Monarch. This is a powerful magazine headed by yours truly, Miss Sylvia Crawley. Check it out. She can tell you where you can pick it up. And love the show. So all yours again, Sylvia.
All right, you can find Monarch at www.monarchmagazine.com. And we are continuing our empowerment series, doing live Twitter chats on Thursday at 3 p.m., so tune into that. Otis, let's get back to you. Talk about your new film that you recently directed called Hard Knocks. Talk to us
actually
a little bit about that.
It's called School of
Hard
Knock
Life.
Yeah, School of Hard Knocks. School of Hard Knocks. It's not a film. It's actually an hour-long drama that we're trying to pitch to the network, and it's one of my babies. You know, I got a few projects that I'm working on. Sil, you were there when we showed the trailer at the beginning of the movie premiere for Oz the Great and Powerful, and it's just something that I feel is needed right now because our kids. And because I'm also a high school coach. I coach a great group of young girls and guys at New Albany High School in Columbus, Ohio. And what I've learned by coaching is that these kids are going through a lot of, like, ins and outs and ups and downs in their lives. So I put together my upbringing and how I was brought up, and I put together the upbringing that I see these kids going through, and I put it into a script where you take kids from two opposite sides of the tracks and combine them and see what happens. You have a bunch of drama, you have a bunch of chaos, but you also have a bunch of learning. When you take the walls down of fear and allow yourself to learn something about someone that you know nothing about, they will end up teaching you something that you never knew. So that's where Hard Knocks is hopefully going to be able to bring to the television waves that we don't see right now. Because if you think about it, besides Glee, give me another high school television show that's on primetime. You know, there really isn't one. You know, a few years back you had Boston Public. A few years back you had the Friday Night Lights with football. But see, the School of Hard Knocks is something different, you know, because we get to tackle so much in America. We get to tackle the racism. We get to tackle the education systems. We get to tackle sports. We're dealing with so many different avenues. And when I say the story is like bananas, the stories are bananas. The storylines will have you looking and wanting more, period.
All right, I went to your viewing party at Ohio State on campus where you showed us a trailer of the show, and it was just enough to get us hooked, but we were mad that you teased us with just a short portion, and we all left wanting to see more, so I can't wait for that to hit the big screens. You're taking acting classes. Talk about classes and what you're learning in those classes.
Oh, man. Acting classes is amazing because what you learn is you learn how to get out of your own way. You can still tend to be a little, you know, shy and get embarrassed and not want to do this and not want to do this. Man, in acting, you got to show everything. You can't, there's no room for you to be shy. There's no room for you to be embarrassed. There's just no room for that. There's no room for that because you got to show your soul. I mean, I remember when I was down there with Terry Vaughn and I was doing a screen skit with her, and the part was crazy. I had to really, really touch it. But Terry had an intimate conversation with me, and she know how deep my emotions run. And she gave me this part. I'm telling you, by the time I got done, I didn't know what I said, what I did. I look up, they all crying like, this dude. And when I got done, she just said, thank you. She said, there it is, thank you. There ain't nothing else I can say. Otis, you went in. And it gives you that relief. It's my release now because I have so much to be frustrated for and from the past that when I act, I get to play it all out. I get to leave it all out there.
I remember you told me that you were in a session, and there was whoever was leading the session told you to think about the person that means the most to you.
Oh, my God.
Tell our listeners about that scenario.
God.
And after that, we're going to take a question.
That was at TikTok. That was Tasha Smith's acting studio. She has a thing called T-Saw workshop, I'm sorry. And she had all the guys on stage, and she made us sit there, and she was like, okay, I want everyone to close their eyes. Like, okay, and I want you to give me one name. And you know, I had threw out my son's name. I said, Rain. She said, okay, now close your eyes again. I said, all right. She said, now imagine you're in a room, four walls, and you're in this room with a bunch of people, and you're walking up. But next thing you know, that room becomes a funeral home, and you're walking by the casket. And in that casket is the name of the person you just said, I lost it. I'm about to lose it now just thinking about it because it was so – I couldn't imagine my life without my children. And I couldn't compose myself because she said, and then she said, these are the last words you get to say to them. And on the way down there, my son had just called me because I had just missed one of his practices. I think actually a game, and he was crying. He's like, Daddy, you missed my game. I said, Daddy, sorry, man. I had to get to Atlanta for this acting thing. So I was already feeling bad. And then to throw his name out and for Tasha to say he's the one in the casket, man, I went bazonkies. I mean, it was one of those gut-wrenching snot coming out your nose cries. Except for you still, it was just so emotional because I realized then how deep it can be when you use that substitution method. And because all she showed me was how to substitute. And I thought about my son, my real son, being in that casket, and I couldn't hold it. Like I couldn't hold it back. And it still to this day gets me because that's any father's, mother's worst nightmare, seeing their child in the casket.
Right. Okay, we have Kenny on the line. Kenny, are you there from Columbus,
yes,
Ohio?
Yes, I am. I sure am. How are you guys today?
We're good.
Hello.
How are you?
How are you, Kenny? I'm doing excellent. I just wanted to just get on the phone and tell others, man, awesome, man, just listening to your journey. I just think it's fantastic of where you came from and where you are today, man. Congratulations.
Appreciate it, bro.
You know, wish you a ton of luck and success out in Hollywood, bro. Don't forget
it.
Congratulations to you also on your talk show here and the radio show. We definitely are happy to hear about it, and that's why we're joining in, and we've been listening here for the whole time. So we wish you the best, the both of you, and many more times on the radio.
I appreciate it,
bro. Well, thank you, Kenny, and thank you for tuning in with your family. And, Kenny, you're a big Ohio State fan, so you've watched Otis grow over the years. So thank you for those comments. I'm sure that means a lot to Otis.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Watch you all your way through, man. Good luck to you, and I wish you the best, all right?
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Kenny.
Have a great evening.
Okay, Kenny,
we're
going to put you on hold. If you have another question, just press 1.
Otis,
talk to us about how you landed your part in the sitcom, The Game. How did that come about?
Well, actually, really, I really didn't. Now that I think about it, every part I got, I didn't really do a lot to get it. Robbie orchestrated that part because it was supposed to be a voiceover part, and they said, well, you know, we can put somebody in there, and Robbie's like, well, how about Otis? Let's try him. He has a nice, you know, voice for it, you know, whatever, look, whatever. And that's how I got that. And if you think about it, still fast forward to Oz the Great and Powerful, I was at a car show. I mean, going to audition in Detroit for a car show. I mean, my ride and die at the time, we got in a car, we rode to Detroit. She was like, be ready, you never know what's going to happen. And she was absolutely right, because when I got there, we were walking out, and a dude comes up to me and said, hey, do you want to be in a movie? And I was like, sure. I didn't think it was going to be as big as it was. And long story short, my work ethic and my attitude towards going in, doing the 15-hour days, only making $110 an hour, losing more money than I was making to be in the movie, ended up paying off, because I ended up getting like three different stunt contracts during the movie. I mean, I the producers and the directors, especially a guy by the name of Casey Haldenfield, they knew who I was, and it was just a blessing, because they were so gracious to me, because I was showing them that I'm going to do whatever I can do to help your movie work. And then fast forward to Think Like a Man 2, one of my friends is casting it, and it was funny because a friend of mine texts me and asks me if I can call my or email my friend and ask her if she can be a background player in the movie. So I did, and then long story short, she ended up texting me or emailing me back, and she's like, hey, can you send me a picture of you without your shirt on? I was like, yeah, right. She's like, no, I'm serious. I said, okay. So
is that the picture that you posted on? Is that the picture that you posted on Facebook, the Instagram the other day?
Whatever, man. No, that ain't. So I did the picture without a shirt on, and the next day she called me and said, "Hey, you got the part of the VIP security for the pool." What it is I'm going to be letting people come through and not come through. And it's a sad role. It's a speaking role. And it's bananas the way God has continually orchestrated my acting career, because he's purposely positioned me with people in my life, not just in acting, but just the people who he has positioned in my life over these past 7 months, 4 years. It's been amazing, man. I got people who are doing things for me that they shouldn't have to, but God is placing me on their heart, and they're taking care of me. They're helping me. It's like I call it Team Otis or Team Focus. I have a great team around me.
Right. You told me a funny story about how you landed the part for the Great and Powerful Oz. You actually went in for one part, but ended up being the head Winky. Please talk to our listeners about how that came about.
Well, the head Winky was a joke that we ended up saying, because it's almost like everyone who was a Winky was 6'5 or taller. And I promise you, I felt like I was back in the locker room when I was with these guys. And they just followed my leadership. I didn't ask for it. I didn't, like, audition for it. What happened was, I went in, and the choreographer had us march. Who knew this tall dude who loves to dance would be a natural marcher? I didn't. So she just had us start marching. I'm marching like I'm dancing, like, shoot, this is good. I got a rhythm. I'm doing it. And next thing you know, I went from the middle of the line to sort of in the front of the line to the front of the line. And not only did I go to the front of the line, after we got done, she would ask me to help those who didn't get it right away, take them aside to help them so she can keep teaching the platoon, because she knew I would catch on quick no matter what she threw at them. So I went
were there people marching off beat, or they couldn't march? I don't understand.
Man, it was the funniest thing. If we were allowed to videotape some of this marching, you got to think, a lot of them still, like I said, we had a 7-footer. A lot of tall people are not coordinated. Look at Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan can't dance, but he can play basketball. But you saw him on a Michael Jackson video. That dude can't dance. So a lot of tall brothers, and it was a lot of little tall white dudes, they couldn't get it. They couldn't get it, and I stood out because I was able to get it. And not only was I able to get it, but I marched like – I practiced like I played. So it was always hard. It was always effort. I always gave it my all. So that stood out. I remember when we had that 15-hour day, we got actually, we called it a Friday. We started at 6 a.m. On Friday morning. We didn't get out of there at 6 a.m. on Saturday morning. And when we got to 3 a.m., I pulled the guys together. I was like, look, fella, this is fourth quarter. Let's get it. Let's get it right, because the sooner we get it right, we get to go home. And little did I know, some of the PAs and ADs were sitting around and watching this, and they, like, I didn't have nothing to gain from doing this. It's just who I am, who I am. And who I am is what rose to the top, and that's what got their attention.
Right. I hear that you're writing a book. Talk to us about that.
No, you're talking about Exodus. Yeah, I'm doing something. You know, I got two that I'm working on, and it's just I just start writing. Whatever it becomes. The first one is called The Love Letters of a Broken Man. And that, you know, you and I talked a little bit about that. I mean, I went through so much, especially these past 7 months. Like I said, I had someone who was very important to me that I did not treat very well. And she stood in there and fought, and I just pushed away and did whatever because I was broken. And what I found out is in these past 7 to 8 months, the emails that I would send and whatever I would write and scatter down, I started to look back at it, and it became these love letters of a broken man. And when a man realized that he was broken, like I said, if he doesn't fix himself, he would never be right for anybody. So those letters that I was writing were healing for me. Those emails that I was writing were healing for me, and it allowed me to be fixed. Everyone's still a work in progress, but when I say I'm not that butthole who I was, I'm not that insecure dude who can hook through phones, I'm not that insecure dude who worried about what other dudes did, said, or what they were putting on Facebook, or that's not me, because I am who I am. It's either you take me how I am or you leave me how I am, but I'm not going to change for anybody. I found me, and now that I found me, nobody is going to make me revert back to what I left. That's like a dog returning to his vomit. I can't go back because I've tasted freedom. Once you've tasted freedom, only a fool goes back in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, where was that when I was in college, and we were talking about off air? You know, because I tried to go to Ohio State. I didn't want to go, and I didn't. But where were you with that word of advice? You could have saved me like a couple years of turmoil and tragedy. But it's okay.
Dude,
I digress.
I had to go through that turmoil and tragedy. I had to lose, like, things that were important to me. I had to sit in my bed and cry out to God, I don't want to be like this anymore. Like I said, I had to look in the mirror. I had to look into my own eyes. Just like my last line of my short that I did called My Life. That last line that I say, Seal, and I think you probably already know what the last line is. When it says, disappointing someone is never easy. Looking into the eyes of the person, of someone who you disappointed, is never easy, especially when they're your own. So looking into the eyes of someone you disappointed is never easy, especially when they're your own. I disappointed myself in so many ways, in so many ways. So to get out of my deep, dark place, to talk about that real quick one more time, to get out of my deep, dark place, Phil, I had to first admit I was in my deep, dark place. I had to first look at that person in that deep, dark place and say, I don't like you. I don't want to be you. Like I said, I'm not a dog. I'm not returning to my vomit. And nobody or anyone or no devil in hell or whoever will make me ever return to him. I know who I am. I am a child of God. I'm a man on fire. I'm a man who's going after his destiny, his dream. I'm going to pursue it. You can laugh at me. You can talk about me. But all it does is is I have a fire, like I put on Twitter today. I have a fire in my belly that's unquenchable. It's unquenchable because it's shot up in my bones, and I refuse to not be what I was created to be. That's my passion. My passion
you
is
better
to
preach. You better preach, Minister Winston. By the way, Otis is also a minister, if you haven't been able to tell by now. Okay, talk about the other book, Otis. You know, you said Pieces of a Broken, Love Letters of a Broken Man, and then the other one, do you, I don't know
it's
if
called,
you even put out the title yet.
The title is powerful. The title is powerful. You already saw the title. I already put it on Facebook. It's called My Exodus, and it's capital E, little X, and quotations that have a big O, which means Otis, and little D-U-S, you know, My Exodus. And what it is my journey, you know, when I was 1 year old, you know, the place that my mom was taking us from was California. And now that's the place where I'm trying to get to. So I feel like I have a Moses anointing on my life. I'm going back to the place that I was sent away from as a child. And it's just my journey as a basketball player, my journey as a father, my journey as an ex-husband, my journey as a friend, my journey as a brother. You know, I have brothers, and I'm a brother. Like I love my brothers and my sister. I love them. Do we always get along? Do we always get it right? Absolutely not. But if I need them to promote something or put something out, I mean, they jump on it like white on rice. You know, my brother Bryant has always been my biggest competition, always. I mean, he made me want to be better. My brother Kevin, I used to look up to him. But Bryant was the one who I really looked up to. That's why I took number 30. I wanted to carry on that legacy. I didn't get number 44. I got number 30. I wanted to carry on that legacy. I had to carry on that legacy, and I wanted to make it better. So Exodus is just that journey of Otis escaping his ferals in his life, because that's what your Exodus is. What's your feral? What are you escaping? What do you need to get away from? What has you bound? And you don't even know it. Because I was bound by insecurities. I was bound by jealousy. I was bound by things that I didn't even know. But once I was released and that was broken off of me, yeah, right. Better watch out. I'm a man on a mission. I ain't worried about you or anybody else who has something negative to say about me. All I say is sit back, get your popcorn, watch the show, because it's about to be one.
And watch. Don't believe me, just watch.
Exactly. Don't believe me, just watch.
Uh-oh. We're going to wrap two
Vic,
now? Come on. Yes, ma'am.
Vic, do we have any more questions? We could take one last question before I go into my final point before we end the show.
Well, as of right now, we don't have any questions popping up in the chat room, and no one's popped up on the phone line. But you got the phone lines on fire, Mr. Man on Fire. You ain't Denzel. Quit it. But,
there's a 614 number, and that's from Columbus, where Otis is. Let's see. Let's take
I'll
them.
Check it out. You want me to just put them on blind, not know who it is? I'll put them on blind if
yep.
you want.
Yep. We're just going to take a
All
chance
right.
this time.
All right. Lord, give me strength. 614-592.
Give me strength, Lord have mercy.
There you go. 614-592. Welcome to... I'm about to say fans for response. Welcome to Time Out with Sylvia Crawley. Please state your name, and you have Otis as well as Sylvia at your disposal. 614-592. Going once.
No, that's not right. That's not right at all. This is Tracy calling from Columbus. And I've known Otis for quite a while myself. I ran track for a little bit at Ohio State. So I just want to say, Otis, I'm very proud of you. Just been listening in to your journey. You know, I know you and the kids very well. So this is wonderful that you're out here being inspirational to all who are listening today. Hope that they can gain something from your experience, because I know that I have with you being in my life. So proud of you, and just keep it going.
Thank you, Tracy.
All right.
Thank you, Tracy,
for
listening.
Tracy is so she's part of that team that I say, like, if I need help with my children, if I can't pick them up, Tracy is the mother of Cameron, my son's best friend. And if I call Tracy, like, hey, Trey, I can't get the kids. Can you go get them? She'll run and get them for me. She is a godsend. I thank God for her being in my life. You know, she's just been good. So I appreciate it. Thanks for the comments, Trey.
So she's part of your children's village because it takes a village to raise a child.
Yes,
so we really appreciate
team.
Tracy for what she does. And thank you for listening, Tracy. Otis, I want to close out with this. When it's all said and done, how do you want the world to remember Otis Winston?
Yeah. besides the guy who smiles a lot, how do I want the world to remember me? I want the world to remember me as a guy who never quit, a guy who really, really looked at life and said, I'm going to do my best at everything that I do, despite not knowing what the outcome would be. That's why I love Forrest Gump, because the one thing that was his biggest weakness, which was his legs, became his biggest strength with his running. His weakness got him into school, got him a full ride, saved his life. I mean, think about that. His weakness did all that. My weakness was me talking. And now, listen to me now. So I want them to remember me as a guy who loved his children, who loved or will be loving, hopefully, his future wife with every ounce of his being, and love to give and let people see a life that they can live by just going out and living outside of yourself. I just want to be remembered as a guy who went out, lived outside himself, and gave everything that he had to give to what he loved and believed in.
Wow. Well, Otis, I want to thank you for being on the show today, and I've been keeping notes because there are a lot of nuggets that you dropped on us today. I think the listeners can be inspired and encouraged by your story. And I jotted down some things that I want to leave our listeners with. One of the things that you said was that one of the things that we learned is that you had a speech impediment. So if you have some kind of difficulty growing up, whether you're dyslexic, whether you have a speech impediment, you can overcome that, you know, and just like Otis told his son, just because that's how it is now doesn't mean that's how it's going to be later, you know, and that's something that you can work at. And I had a brother who was actually dyslexic, and he has his PhD, and he's a doctor, and teaches communications as a professor at Robert Morse College today. Another thing you said was looking into the eyes of someone you've disappointed is never easy, especially when they're your own. I thought that was a powerful statement. That's definitely going to be on Twitter tonight by me and retweeted by many others. And then you end it by saying that you want people to, that you want to look at life saying, I'm going to do my best, not knowing what the outcome will be. Never quit. You're listening to Time Out with Sylvia Crawley, featuring Otis Winston today. Time Out means to pause, assess the situation, correct some things, regroup, and resume with an opportunity to play better. I hope that you were inspired today. We encourage you to listen on next week. I have a incredible lineup of guests, so tune in every single week. You can find out who's going to be on the next show on my Facebook page, which is Time Out, and also on my Instagram page, on my personal Facebook page, so you can keep up with the show on that. You can leave any comments. If you know someone who needed to hear the show and they missed it, you can tell them to get on the Facebook Time Out page, and we will post a link so that you can listen to the archives of this show. And the number to call in the future is 347-637-3220. And let's take a time out. Vic, can you take us home?
want. Tell me what you see, where you want to go, what you want to be. If you have a dream, you can make it there with a lot of work and a lot of prayer. If you take your time, gotta be precise, gotta have a plan, double check it twice. Wait, hold up, slow down, still gonna need advice. Someone's gone before, maybe talk to them. Then after you do, go and talk to him. Great, it's gonna come, maybe not tonight. Take your time today, teach you something right.
Got a lot of friends, made a lot of ends. Twitter, you the trend, in my Bentley Benz. But you moving kind of fast. Keep sweats, you gotta make it last. Live every day like it's your last. But don't forget to have a blast.